Hey, this is the J.R.R. You Tolkien to Me podcast. I don't see anyone else here but Jude Fox. Jude, are you Tolkien to me once again about the Rings of Power?
Well, I've been dripping water into a caldera all day long and just to see what happens.
Okay, have you been Udooning?
Oh, you know I've been Udooning. Have Udoon?
Sure. I've got a dark pit all set up.
I'll bet you do.
So that's what that means. Udoon, dark pit, or hell. It's a nod to Utumno, which was Morgoth's northern fortress that I believe Galadriel was checking out in episode one. And Aradruin is Mount Doom, and we're going to see something about that in this episode. A lot of exciting stuff, Jude. A lot of Adar.
Oh,
Adar,
yeah.
And the orcs.
Lots of orcish, elfish. We've got a lot going on in this episode, and I'm really looking to dig into it.
All right, so let's go through it scene by scene, as per usual. And we'll add a bunch of commentary, things heating up with the theories, and let's go through it. So we're going to start off with Adar's hands, one heavily armored, and the other one holding the Alfarin seeds, which it seems to be a big thing with the elves. And he says, new life in defiance of death. Seems to be an elven ritual before battle. And then we're going to overlook the orc army. They got torches, and orcs are us, as far as the eye can see. And
oh, yeah.
Adar's going to give a pep talk. He's going to give a little speech about how much they've endured, and they're casting off their shackles. They've wandered the lands, and they are no longer going to be unnamed slaves, but they're going to be brothers and sisters. There's some female orcs there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Can you tell the difference?
I don't know. I haven't seen any.
I was looking, and I could not tell the difference.
But they're going to be brothers and sisters in their home. He wants a homeland for the orcs, and then they start chanting Nampat, which is, of course, death.
Yes, we learned what that means in black speech.
So they want to live in a dark pit of hell, and they like to chant death. So, you know, just, you know, your freedom-seeking peoples of Middle Earth.
And of course, when Adar mentions that some of them might fall during this battle, the camera just lingers on Waldrig. Did you notice that?
But Waldrig...
And he's looking around nervously, like, who's he talking about?
We're going to talk a little bit about the opposite of Waldrig later, which in my is Treadwell.
There's lots of Waldrig to discuss in this episode.
But I want to talk about the opposite of Waldrig. But you'll see what I'm talking
poor
about.
Poor Treadwell.
Treadwell. I got him a red shirt just for Hanukkah last year. Lucky red shirt. So, the orc army reaches the watchtower, but there's nobody there.
Wah, wah, wah.
Find them is the command. But we know that Arondir is hiding up there somewhere with his bow and arrow.
He's sneaky.
Adar, he's going to see that Sauron-looking shaped headpiece in the relief. And speaking of shitty Waldrig, he's going to ask, what happened to Sauron? Well, he would say that, but he ain't going to get no answer from Adar. We're going to find out more later, but no.
No, Adar does not answer to these lesser creatures.
No, especially because he can smell the elf somewhere. Smells elfy. So, Arondir appears, and he starts shooting orcs left and right, and it seems like he's rigged or maybe with the help of the townies, they've rigged this whole tower in like Rube Goldberg style. He's going to shoot certain things out. He's going to do some fancy footwork. And Arondir is going to take out this whole tower. And in flame, it's going to come crashing down on a whole bunch of orcs, just as planned.
Yeah, I think this is just one time in the episode, and there's several that Arondir proves that he is the most badass elf we've seen since Legolas, at least.
He's Legolas...
like.
For this
show. He's Lego-like.
Yeah.
Lego-like?
He's Lego-like.
Lego-like.
So the whole town is really, they're outside of the tower area, and they are ready to prepare the village with some more traps.
Yeah, they're watching like it's an episode of Candid Camera. They're like, ha-ha.
But I'll tell you what, Arondir's really winning him over with his bravery and his skills.
Yeah, he is.
And so now we're on the Numenorean ship, and guess who can't sleep, Jude?
Could it be that pain in the ass, Isildur?
It's the meddling kid. It's Isildur. He can't sleep, and he decides to visit the stables. He's going to give Beric some of his apple, and then he's going to take it back and eat some more of it. I don't know how clean that is to do with a horse, but, you know, hey.
He's gonna, I actually had to look that up.
And it's...
And actually, it doesn't seem to cause many diseases. I was kind of hoping it did.
Coxsackie virus.
Hey.
So anyway, because he's going
to... We don't need to get into that name.
I've had that virus, and it's painful. He goes on to the deck of the ship, and he engages with Galadriel, who's up there, and... she asks him who he is, and then he's like, oh, I'm the lowly stable boy. And she's like, that's cool. Even the stable boy, you know, can keep the real Numenor in his heart. And the real Numenor is sort of like this dream. It's this concept. It's this faithful place that used to exist. And Galadriel assures him that even the shittiest of stable boys can keep Numenor alive in their heart and mind.
Now go back and sweep shit.
Yes, please. And oh, by the way, I could see the shore like an hour ago, because I'm an elf and I got the keen elf eyes, and you got the regular stable boy eyes. But I like you because I like your dad.
And actually, there's an interesting point to that, is the fact that she mentions being able to have seen it for some time already. I forget what she says exactly.
For an hour.
But for an hour. Which means that in this world, there is no horizon, because there'd be a horizon in our world by that. But you got to keep in mind, this is before the world was made round.
Right.
The world is still flat, so the elves can see virtually infinitely as long as there's nothing blocking their path, which is like a really cool point that was brought out by this.
Also, it's going to tie into Isildur is going to go back down when his dad comes up. And Elendil is going to mention having been in Numenor for so long, being on the opposite side of the sunrise and the sunset. And it feels like, for him, he's sailing into dawn, but it feels like the coming of the night. So that goes to what you just says about the flat earth theory in Tolkien's world the sinking of Numenor.
Yeah, it's not a flat earth theory even in this world. In this world, the earth is flat, and it will eventually, as we know, be made round at some point.
Right. Okay. So Galadriel does ask about Isildur's mother. And... Elendil, instead of answering right away, he does go into this story about he feels like he's sailing into the night instead of the dawn. And then he just kind of almost flippantly answers, she drowned.
Yeah, because the sea is always right, right?
The sea is always right. That's what they say.
Yeah, that's what they say. Tolkien sure wrote that one, right?
Well, it's not going to listen to you argue back, that's for sure. You can't argue with the sea. And you can't.
A little. Go a ahead. Bit stubborn.
So, yeah, she drowned. She dead, he said. And she's he walks away. And now he's down and he's talking to Muriel below deck. And he's giving her the inside skinny on how long things are going to take. It's going to be another day's sail once they hit the shore into the mountains. And then another day's ride into the Vale. And she's like, go fast then. That's her command, basically. Go fast. She says it in a fancier way.
It's kind of not the last time we're going to hear that basic phrasing in this episode, but we'll get into that when we do.
So, Arondir is, he's trying to destroy that goddamn key, Sauron hilt.
With a beautiful thing. Transition, by the way, in between.
Oh, yes.
Two.
Like,
with
she puts her little
looking glass.
Looking glass down. That was very Tolkien-esque. But it is beyond his skill to destroy. And he's like, you know, he decides he's going to hide it. Only he's going to know where it is. No one else is to know. But we see that Theo's watching in the background.
Yeah, Arondir is not the one that you pick to play hide and seek. He is just the worst at it. Absolute worst.
He hit it, I think, right where Theo found it originally. In a board underneath a floorboard in the tavern. Bronwyn and Arondir are now, they're setting up the village, and they're setting up their plan with the villagers. The tavern's going to be the fallback point. That's where Theo's going to protect all the people that can't fight, and in the event that they have to fall back, that's where they're all going to fall back and defend the tavern.
He's going to make himself useful.
And Adirondir gives his "Do you believe it?" speech, which, as far as these speeches go, was it was okay.
I've actually got some of his speech, along with a little rewrite that I did myself.
So I would love to hear that.
Oh, yeah. He starts off, he says, you know, "Soon the sun will set. Do your part, and I swear you shall see it rise again." But then he should go on to say, but not you, or you, or like two-thirds of you. You're just the rest of you will be fine.
But also, wow, and you're telling me, like, if we're lucky, we get another day? But anyway.
Yes, but not most of you. Not most of you.
You'll see it rise again for at least one more day, and then the orcs will kill you. So we get a montage, because, you know, you need a montage before a battle. And there's a lot of smithy stuff going on, and they're setting up... they're setting up some traps.
They really needed a better montage song, but, you know.
Well, you know what we did get, though? We saw a lot of what this is really all about, Jude. And what do I always say it's really all about?
The friends we made along the way.
That's right, Jude. The friends we... And we do. We see a lot of people comforting each other. They're hugging each other. They're celebrating life,
and pretty soon we're gonna find that a lot of people made friends with orcs.
Right. Well, we're gonna see that, you know, some people are good and some people are on. They're just gonna go along and do whatever it takes for themselves. But but Theo is searching for comfort from Bronwyn. And she says the thing that is a constant theme, particularly of the most salt of the earth characters like Samwise. He says a version of this. In the end, this shadow is but a small and passing thing. There is light and high beauty forever beyond its reach. And she's comforted him as a child, and now she's comforting him before battle. Gandalf says something similar to Pippin, I believe, and Sam says something like that to Frodo. It's just a constant refrain.
And I got to be honest, I'm actually beginning to really like Theo more and more as the show is going on. At first, I was not very fond of him, and I thought about it, and I realized, I think it's now that that little bastard Rowan's gone.
Well, I think he's gone.
I hope he better not pop up.
I don't know. Adar doesn't seem like he's messing around. If he tells you, you got to cut a throat.
I still wanted to see it. But
so Bronwyn and Arondir, he's they're by themselves now, and he's given her the Alferin seeds.
He's going to give her his seed. Yeah.
Yep, and he's going to tell her to plant one before the battle.
Yeah.
And they say, they say the same thing that Adar says, life in defiance of death. So that's clearly an elven thing. Yeah. And, Adarondir expresses that he kind of wants to live happily ever after there with Bronwyn and Theo after they are, what he's sure is going to be victorious against these goddamn dirty stankin' orcs.
Then what do they do? Come on, I've been waiting for this.
Oh, you talking about the kissy time?
Oh man, come on. They finally kiss. And come on, a kiss in a Tolkien world is like triple X full on. I mean, you don't go further than that.
Well, no you don't, Jude. And so they do.
Look, I'm taking what I can get, okay?
Remember, it's a family mutilation show, as I always say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's going to get gruesome. I was shocked coming up here.
Oh, the eye. The eye.
Well, we will get well into that.
Go for the eye, Mr. Giant Orc. So there's a lot of torches coming in the night, a lot of orcs with their torches. These aren't the really well-armored orcs that we're going to see in the Third Age, though. These are shabbily clad, not very well-armored orcs, in my opinion.
No, this is like the equivalent of, forming a militia and giving someone a broom handle.
Yeah, you know, it's... And the whole thing is really small scale. It's almost like a Revolutionary War battle.
It felt very much like that.
When you see the numbers of those first battles that are so infamous and famous, Bunker Hill... and battles, the first battle of the road, and you see the numbers involved, very small war, at first. Anyway, this reminds me of that. So Bronwyn, she's a pretty badass, ambushing an orc, and then she nails some of them with a flaming wagon as the battle ensues.
Stop making it dirty.
There's a flaming wagon. How is that dirty?
Well, you know, if she's nailing him with it.
Oh, okay, Jude. Is that what you think? Do you need a timeout again?
Oh.
So there's people dying and there's orcs dying. And Adarondir, he's going to fight a big giant-ass orc, isn't he, Jude?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, first, the fact that what they do is they corral them in between the flames to create a shooting gallery. Which, that was just cool as hell to watch. They're just taking them out. They've got no place to go for a while. That was, I thought, a great tactic. And then, yeah, Arondir ends up fighting the big orc, which he kills one orc. And then he kind of backs into the other, making me think of watching like Lou Costello bump into Boris Karloff and Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein. It was played and it was shot almost the exact same way, which was kind of brilliant because it had a totally different tone, but really felt like it was mimicking that.
Well, I was glad to see that it got pretty brutal.
Oh, yeah, it did.
We gouged out an orc's eye. Giant orc gets his eye just ripped out with it with that dagger, and then he pulls it out of his own head, and he's really slowly going to take out Arondir's eye, and we're getting a super sharp point real close to Arondir's eye.
This felt like a nod to Lucio Fulci, if anyone's watched films like The Beyond or Zombie. Classic Italian horror films. It's shot almost exactly like the Splinter in the Eye scene in The Beyond, which, once again, a very famous shot and surprising, incredibly surprising to have in a show like this.
Well, that's beyond me. Anyway, so he gets saved. Bronwyn's going to come up from behind him and pull a George R. R. Martin thing. Oh, she's going to stab him right through the head.
She's going to kind of pull a him. It's almost exactly the way he saved Theo.
Yep. That's true. That's true, too. It reminded me, though, a lot of one of the scenes in the books of Song and Ice and Fire where... I can't remember who's actually doing the fighting. I'll have to get back to you on that one. That's a different show, but it happened. Okay. So now,
now they're looking at the aftermath.
They're looking at the aftermath and they're realizing that not all the orcs are orcs at all.
Some of them have red blood. Whoopsie daisy.
Oh, gross. Red blood. Ooh, that's a human. So they find out that a lot of them are their fellow villagers. Turn to the dark side.
Friends and family. I mean, they don't get into it, but we can make that leap.
You know, that's depressing. So
that was Jimmy over there. I used to get bread from him every day. What the fuck?
Yeah. Oh, fuck him. Really? You know, they had to pay the toll.
He was my son's godfather.
Yeah, whatever. They had to pay the toll, says one dying orc. They had to be the guys, really the red shirts, right? And then all of a sudden, though, they're surrounded. Orcs are killing off people. Some arrows fly. R.I.P. Treadwell.
Again, you had to buy him that red shirt.
Who is this cool old dude who is fighting so valiantly?
Kicking ass. Taking names.
Yeah, he had...
Chewing bubblegum.
He was pitchforking them orcs. You know? He was probably just a farmer, but he could pitchfork some goddamn orcs. Goddamn it, that Treadwell. And now he's dying.
He's dead well.
But they bring him into the tavern, right? Doesn't he die in the tavern?
Yeah, they try to save him. They make a valiant effort.
But they're falling back to the tavern. And you know who even takes a couple of arrows there? It's Bronwyn.
Yeah. She gets one right through the shoulder.
And they're going to have to cauterize those wounds with a big old flaming stick.
I've got something to say about the triage tactics of Arondir over here.
He does have the Alfrin seeds to help.
He does, which I'm sure save her life. But the way he pulls the arrow out is just wrong. He breaks off the point of the arrow and pulls it back out from the direction it came in. Now, traditionally, what you do is you would break off the end of the arrow and pull it the other way. And the reason for this is that the wood of the arrow, not just the point, but the wood in the shaft, once it's entered you, is pushing your flesh in one direction. So by pulling it back out the way it came in, you're pulling it back the other way, and you're actually doing more damage. Whereas when you continue to pull it through, it actually does a lot less damage, and you get less bleeding. So he almost killed her by doing that.
Well, maybe he's a Sauron then.
Wah, wah, wah.
Not everybody's an arrow-pulling expert like you, Jude.
He's a couple thousand years old. You'd think he would know.
Yeah, well, maybe no one knows. Anyway, except you. Meanwhile, here comes the motherfucking cavalry. They're on their way. You know, but by the way, did I mention that Adar and the orcs are in the tavern? Now, and they're gonna pretty much set up a power play here to get that key. But we do cut to a shot where the cavalry's coming. Lady G, Lady Galadriel, Big Hal, we're gonna call him Hal Brand. Yes, the whole gang.
We will ignore the fact that the books specifically say that The Numenoreans do not use horses in battle, but it looks cool, and I am down for it. I've got no problems with it.
This is the new Numenor, my friend. The horse-friendly Numenor. So the orcs break in. Adar comes in, walking behind old leader of the bad guy style. And he talks to Rondir. And the orcs basically have blades to everyone's throat here. And they just, Adarondir hesitates to give them what they're looking for, which is the Sauron hilt key. And they just start killing, basically. One at a time, but with enough frequency where it's really, like, pretty brutal. Once again,
surprisingly brutal for this show. I was not ready for it.
I was ready for it and waiting. And so the woman next, he means Bronwyn, is going to be next.
Yeah, she is.
So, you know, that ain't good.
No, Rondir looks like he may flinch, like it's a little uncertain, but then...
Well, Theo knows where it is, though. That Theo. Meddling kid.
Because, again, Rondir can't hide for shit.
Not when you got Theo looking out over your shoulder. And,
You could have had a blind man looking and he would have found it. Thanks, Rondir.
He gives it to Adar. But what's that rumbling sound? Here come the Numenoreans. Here come the Numenoreans. And yep. But Adar, he kind of anticipates getting their asses kicked, and he's gonna hand this thing off to Waldrake. He's got something for him that he's gonna have him do. What's that gonna be?
Fucking Waldrake.
You know. We're gonna get to that.
But so, we get the cavalry coming in, literally.
Yeah, they're just cutting down orcs left and right. Schwap, schwap, bang. Galadriel, she's going to take out an orc upside down on her horse.
Dodging an arrow.
Dodging the arrow. And then
cutting him in half.
Cutting him in half, the one that shot the arrow.
Yeah.
Valendiel and Atamno. Valendiel's going to save him. Miriel's going to let Isildur join the fray.
Yeah.
Because he's itching to go. Halbrand's going to save Elendil. And
there's a lot of saving going on.
And we are going to get the epic elven horse chase, Galadriel versus Adar.
Now, leading up to this, we have our first interaction with Galadriel and Arondir, which I kind of found interesting in the way he knows who she is. She's famous. He is like, you know, she's Galadriel, leader of our northern armies or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, hey, soldier.
Yeah. But she's like, I respect your shit, man.
Yeah. She's like, I don't know who the fuck you are, but, you know, good job. Thanks. All right. What's going on? Let me do my job now.
She's going to remember his name.
Will she? Will she mention it in the Third Age?
Yep.
I think not.
There's a promotion in it for you. Anyway, Halbrand joins in the chase. He comes from the other way. What did he do? He knows some tricks of the forest there.
He's not bad on horseback.
So they're going to take down Adar. You know who's going to do it? Halbrand. He's going to trip up the horse from the other side. Yep. He's going to pull one of those things. Now, if this was your... sexy, dirty, filthy George R. R. Martin sexy time show, that horse would have gotten its feet chopped right off. It would have been disgusting. But this one gets right back up.
Making sure that we don't have too much animal cruelty here.
Yeah, not...
Just human cruelty.
A ton of human cruelty. A ton. But no animals. Anyway.
And incidentally, Galadriel, when she's chasing... She whispers to the horse, Norolim, which means run swift in Sindarian. And you may recall that it's the same thing that that they used in the film version of Fellowship of the Ring when Arwen is trying to save Frodo from the Ringwraiths when she has Frodo on the horse.
Right.
And she whispers, Narolim, Narolim, to him.
And Shadowfax so has to show the meaning of the word haste.
Yes, yes.
So let's just say that from now on. That's easy. So Adar, Adar doesn't remember Halbrand. And this we're gonna have to unpack this later because a lot of people are like, "You might be a Sauron." This is backing up some Sauron theories. How Adar and
yes, it is.
Halbrand deal with each other. Galadriel stops Halbrand from killing him, and it seems like Adar is just sort of begging for it. He's kind of egging him on. Did I do something to a woman that you loved, or maybe a child? Did I do something? I've done a lot of things to children. It's my specialty.
Too many to remember.
Oh, I'm evil, mind you. Not to the orcs. To them, I'm good. But let me remind you, I've done things to children. So Galadriel stops him from killing, and he's going to later stop her from killing him. Everybody wants to kill Adar sometimes.
And everybody wants to stop them.
So, now
we get into the stuff we have to, I feel, unpack the most probably here.
Well, I don't know about you, but first, Isildur and Valendil, they're going to be orc hunting in Galadriel's company. Yes. And now Galadriel is questioning Adar. And she's figured out that he is the basically the proto-orc, the first orcs that were taken, captured by Morgoth, and misshapen and tortured.
The Moriandor.
Right, the Moriandor.
Which means sons of the dark, apparently.
But you know, Galadriel, really, you know, it's Uruk, okay? It's Uruk. Get with the times.
Yeah, fucking racist bitch.
It's we prefer Uruk, says Adar. And he's going to say that later, too, again, and it's kind of funny because he's kind of sarcastic and spiteful at the end of the conversation. But
he's a bit adamant about it, though. It truly is offensive, the term Uruk, apparently, as opposed to Uruk.
I mean, doing bad things to children's okay. Just don't call me an orc, please. So after Morgoth's defeat...
I think the question of who's good and who's bad really comes into play in this scene here.
After Morgoth's defeat, this is according to Adar, Sauron devoted himself to healing Middle-earth, bringing its ruined lands together in perfect order, using the power of the unseen world. Sauron got a bunch of orcs to follow him up north, probably to Morgoth's hidden palace there, Tumnow. And he got heavily into the dark magic, looking for some hidden dark knowledge.
As one does.
And he was probably doing a lot of orc sacrifice in these dark rituals. And finally, Adar gets fed up with him killing what he deems as his children, the orcs.
Which likely literally are.
And he says that he cut Sauron, he split him open.
Yep, and he believes that he is dead.
He thinks he killed Sauron.
I don't think he knows how the Maiar work.
You think he would, though. He's been around for a very long time. But anyway, so Adar makes the case that all creatures, even orcs, deserve to live, and they're actually all made by Iluvatar.
Yep.
And, you know, Iluvatar even says he is the source of all things, even... all things Melkor come from him. So Adar does have a point. And he says, soon this land will be ours. Then you'll understand.
He also, when speaking about the orcs, he virtually pleads to Galadriel, saying that each one has a heart. Each one has a name, a heart. And she just brushes him off. She is... ice cold about it.
Well, you know what she says?
She says, a black heart.
She's like, yeah, all orcs must die, basically. And you're and he's going to be the last orc to die because she wants him to hear the sound of all his children dying.
Yeah, and again, he says, you know, that we are creations of the one, master of the secret fire, same as you, as worthy of breath, of life, and just as worthy of a home.
Right.
And she's like, whatever.
He is he's basically a civil rights leader in Middle Earth.
She is basically Ilsa She-Wolf of the SS here.
However,
I mean, you know, without all the sex.
However, we do know that orcs like to chant
Numpat,
which means death, and they want to make the world a dark pitted hell. And
That being said, I mean, they're chanting death, but I feel that in this kind of context, it could have more than one meaning. It could also be death to the oppression and slavery and chains that they seem to feel that they've been under for all these years.
But also,
death.
Was it a child that I did something to?
Boo-hoo.
You know, did I kill a woman that you loved? So, you know, I don't think that's good PR, Adar, for
no,
us.
No, it's not the best, but I think that Adar's goals and his quest and even his arguments really set him at a different level than even
Adar
I've seen him
at a different level? Adar different level?
Oh, see what you did there?
So,
I see what you did there.
You know, he brings up a good point that Galadriel's genocidal ideology is kind of evil and that maybe she's Morgoth's successor. Ha!
Maybe she should have been looking in that mirror of hers.
She's looking at the Galadriel in the mirror. But she's not asking her to change her ways. She's saying, kill the orcs. She knows what she wants. She wants a world without orcs. Or oryx.
Like she does not accept giving them a place of their own where they could just be by themselves and like not venture out past the clouds. She's not down for that.
Because she knows it's not going to happen.
She wants to basically torture this guy, make him watch his children die, and then kill him.
But then she gets like, so mad. Then she gets so mad that she actually almost kills him right there, and she gets stopped by Halbrand. Now Halbrand
yes,
stops
she
her.
Does.
And Adar asks Halbrand who he is, and that's the most interesting part. If you're a Sauron, is Halbrand theorist?
Right,
when he says that.
Know.
You had to change your pants there if you're a Sauron, is Halbrand guy.
What is Halbrand's response?
Nothing.
Nothing. He just doesn't even turn around. All we see is that shot of his shoulder with the armor, which he presumably crafted, that's all covered in rings.
Well, you know what? Thanks, show. You know what the show's doing? They're playing, you might be a Sauron.
It's definitely trying to lead us down that path somewhat. Whether or not that plays out, we'll have to see. But it's definitely, definitely giving us those clues.
Yes. Now, Halbrand and Galadriel, they have a little talk. And this is I also find this extremely interesting. She's urging him to free himself of this guilt of the past. And then he says that fighting by your side, the feeling that he gets from fighting by her side, he wants to bind that feeling to his very being.
Bind it. Mm-hmm.
And she says,
like that, one ring?
Well, that he uses the term bind, which is, of course, right. That's what comes up. And she says she feels it too. So what is that? What are they feeling when they're fighting together? Are they feeling love? Are they feeling power? What are they feeling together, Jude? Is this some kind of union of good and evil?
Well, I think if we're going to say that perhaps Halbrand is Sauron, then, you know, it's a matter of two sides of the same coin kind of a deal, I feel.
But is it perhaps that it's Sauron when he is truly repentant at the part at the beginning of the Second Age? I know this timeline-wise maybe isn't the beginning. We don't know. The Second Age is all compressed at this point.
Yeah.
But is this the repentant mode?
It could very well be. I think I predicted in our preview episode that they might do something along those lines with Sauron. And if, in fact, Halbrand is Sauron, then I think that would be pretty correct.
Right. And again,
you know, to give him complexity that he's kind of lacking in the books.
Complexity in terms of adding some sympathy for the devil in there, and then also complexity for Galadriel, adding some definite darkness into her light.
Yep.
Again, we got the peanut butter cup, the power peanut butter cup. It's not Mithril, it's Galadriel and Halbrand. But Halbrand gets summoned by the Queen Regent, by Muriel, and Adirondir and Bronwyn are going to the Queen, and the Queen offers them help. She's introduced to Bronwyn, and she introduces Bronwyn to Lord Halbrand.
Yeah.
And are you the king? And he's like, yes. And are
well, actually, what she asks is, you know, are you the king that was promised? And I couldn't help but think, king that was promised, prince that was promised. I want to make a joke here, but I just can't find one.
He's Jon Snow.
Wah, wah, wah.
So are we sure that he's got a pouch? That says he's the king. That he didn't even. He said he killed some guy and got or got it off a dead body when he was originally
talking
about.
He got it off
Galadriel.
A dead man.
He might so not have. Do we really know? We'll take it. He seems kingly. He's nice. He seems nice.
He's good looking.
Can't be a Sauron. Never.
No, he has a fair form. Come on.
The Sauron's got the horns. You could always tell the Sauron's.
Every time.
So, that's a little, you know, they really rush into that acceptance of his king thing. They didn't even do a DNA search. What are those things called? 23andMe? So, Rondir's talking to Theo, and he's telling him not to feel guilty about, you know, having that power key, but Theo confesses that he felt powerful when he had it, and he actually misses having it, and that's what he's worried about, missing that feeling of power. And Arondir's giving him back what he thinks is the wrapped up Sauron hilt / key, but
yeah,
no,
elves
no,
don't check anything.
No, elves.
Galadriel. Arondir, they do not check shit.
What is it?
They just take it at face value.
It's a little axe.
Yep.
It's a little axe that's wrapped up, because Adar has a small axe to grind with the elves. Ha ha. So, yeah. And you know who does have the key?
Oh, let me guess.
Can
it's
you
that
guess?
Creepo in the windowless white van again.
It's Waldrig.
Bastard.
Waldrig's putting that key in. He knows where to go and get it. Apparently, they must have been, like, really infiltrating this elven watchtower, because Sauron, or whoever, rigged this whole thing. It must have taken a really long time, and it had to be well hidden, or else the elves would have dismantled it. But they just needed to build some tunnels underneath, and they got this whole system.
We still don't have any answers to why the hell the orc in the kitchen looks so different than all the rest, but we do get the reason for the tunnels, and it was not just for them to get around during the daylight. I mean, that helped, but that was not the actual reason.
No, it's going to create a cataclysmic flood system that's going to flood the mountain of a road's ruin and turn it into a goddamn Mount Doom. It's going to be a goddamn volcano like you've never seen it, and it's going to start spitting out the large volcanic rocks. And it's going to break up all the Numenorean celebration and glee that we got going on with a hailstorm of these giant volcanic rocks that are just... I think I saw one Numenorean just disintegrate.
And it's all because of that right little bastard Waldrig. I mean, it's like the old saying goes, you know, Waldrigs will be Waldrigs. And... I mean, you're familiar with, like, the tale of the frog and the Waldrig. You know, the frog takes Waldrig halfway across the water, and Waldrig just starts stabbing him with the goddamn Morgul blade.
We'll get back to Waldrig in a second.
What he does.
Because what I want to talk about, we get a very touching moment between Elendil and Isildur, because
they
finally bond over what's the real source of tension and dysfunction, I think, in Isildur's life may be the fact that they haven't reckoned the death of the mother.
Yes, because how can the sea do that? It's always right.
Right, right. But she was a horse whisperer, and she taught her horse whispering things to her husband, Elendil, and Isildur.
Kind of a regular Catherine the Great there.
And Isildur wants to... he wants to know his mother somehow, and you can tell that all of a sudden he seems like a very real teenager when he rests his head on his father's chest. Because teenagers, you know, sometimes they don't show what the real issues are and what the real how deep their depression goes. And I think in that second, Elendil recognizes his son's vulnerability. And he's not a sea captain at that time or a Numenorean war hero. He is just a dad. And I thought that was a more of a profound moment. We haven't seen a lot of moments like that.
That was a very well done piece of television.
So the waters start bursting up through the town as this volcanic rock is hitting too. And that's a very violent geysers coming up out of the ground, because the tunneling system, this was part of the design, I'm sure, to have these violent bursts of water come out. But also the water is going to get into the lava system near the mountain and then create the giant eruption. And it's shooting smoke and ash out, and we have Mordor. This is the origin story of Mordor, according to the show.
According to the Atlas of Middle-earth, it suggests that the genesis of Udun, which is actually a part of Mordor, was likely the formation of Mount Doom itself, and that the valley which it's in is probably a caldera or an annular dike, which is formed, again, by an eruption. So this is very much in line with both Tolkien and the supplemental materials which have analyzed his geography.
Well, at the very last scene, we're going to see the ash and the fire and the flame and the wind engulf the village, the villagers, and Galadriel, who I think is going to be just fine considering the fact that all elves can take, like, it seems to be like a severe beating. take just about anything, including Adar, who seemed to just let himself be landed on by fiery wood and stone from the falling tower. He knew that he could withstand that very easily, it seemed.
Well, I mean, the cloud that's coming, there's actually a term for it. It's called a pyroclastic flow, which is essentially what happened in Pompeii. So, I mean, there's still going to be a big question how anyone, especially the Numenoreans, could possibly survive such a thing as we know that basically it incinerates you and freezes you in place, generally. You know, it's almost nuclear levels of power that the pyroclastic flow has. But again, I don't know how any of them survived. I don't know how Muriel or, Isildur and Arondir and much less Ultimo and Ultimo or whatever the hell the friends' names are. You know, like, I have no idea how they're going to survive. I mean, we presume that they will in some capacity, but we're going to have to wait and find out.
Well, clearly, the Numenoreans are going to take a fall here in numbers. The battle was a victory.
None of them died during the fight, not one. I've watched it 3 or 4 times, and I'm looking to see. I'm like, one of them had to fall to the orcs. Nope. Not a single one, not until the eruption starts and some of the orcs then attack again and take one or two down.
But
that first battle, not one.
This isn't the Numenor that we're going to see. What we saw today is a little taste. We're going to see a much more elevated military imperialistic Numenor that comes into being under Pharazon as a result of following an elf and dying. He's going to really use this as a wedge issue back in Numenor and possibly to usurp Muriel and certainly Palantir, the king, not the thing.
Maybe as a way to get into his cousin's pants there?
Well, I don't really think he's... he's gonna force her to marry. He forces her to marry him.
Yeah.
And that's what's gonna happen, possibly. But more than that, let's talk a little bit about Halbrand and Adar. The fact is that, like we discussed, Halbrand never says what Adar actually did to him. The fact that Adar still questions who he is and questions it on a deeper level. Now, you got to think that this is a being that's been around for thousands of years, one of the first orc generation. So he's been around for a long time. He's fought in many battles. For him to question something a second time in wonderment like that, that just feeds strongly into the Halbrand is Sauron theory.
Yeah, I believe he would have been taken during the time of the trees or possibly the lamps. I know it was before the sun that the first elves were taken. So, I mean, again, this is before the sun and the moon were even a thing. That's how long he's been like this, much less how long he lived before that.
Right. So for him to question, like to wonder who this guy is, says something in and of itself.
He's like, there's something with that guy. I don't know what it is, but there's something there.
Right. Now, of course, in the beginning of the Second Age, according to the lore, Sauron sort of... he was repentant, and then he realized he was really going to be, like, given a real trial. And he became, you know, he basically went back to his evil ways rather than face up some sort of punishment with a lack of Morgoth being there. And then he was going to use his wiles to take over Middle-earth. And it's 1,200 years in the making of him becoming the deceiver Annatar. So in this version of Middle-earth, we might be in a mode where this is repentant Sauron. Sauron was a changeling. He could take on many different forms. He certainly could do that in the Second Age. So this could be...
And while he could take on different forms and change form at will... if a form is destroyed, from my understanding of the material at least, it is difficult and it's an effort for even a Maiar to reconstitute a physical form again. You know, we saw like in the Two Towers what it took for Gandalf to come back. We know that later on Sauron has issues with his form and once it's tied to the ring. So again, if by chance a physical form of his was destroyed, it may have been, you know, it's usually also presented as a bit of a rebirth for that Maiar. You know, it takes them a while to remember who they are, and they may be a bit different in each new form they take.
But I have to, I don't think that that's what's happening in Sauron's case, though, because I don't think Sauron actually died when Morgoth was taken into the void. And
no,
Sauron could easily generate a new form without losing memory or anything like that.
Well, I mean, again, I'm posing that if Adar had, quote unquote, killed, you know, or cut open, I believe is the term he used, the form that Sauron was in while he was with him, that perhaps coming back in a new form, maybe in this form, you know, it gave him a new perspective and he's considering his ways and considering, you know, is he repentant? Isn't he? What is he going to do with this? And, I mean, I think we all know where it will eventually lead, but it's about the journey, not the destination when it comes to this.
So two possibilities being that he's either repentant or he doesn't even really realize who he actually is yet.
Or a bit of both. It could definitely be a bit of both.
But he does have some memories, and he does have a backstory about...
He knows that Adar did something to him, that he has hurt him in some capacity that is very deep.
Adar, now, in his conversation with Galadriel, he is saying that basically orcs didn't make themselves. We didn't choose this form. We live the same way you do, and we're concerned with our survival just like you.
He makes a compelling case.
But Galadriel, she sees them as being, by definition, evil. Like, they're not going to be able to do anything but destroy and try to take over the lands, and if they're left unchecked and if they're allowed to set up this place, there's never ever going to be any peace, and they're gonna overrun the Middle Earth.
Yeah.
Now, this type of situation is seen throughout world history. It's not a mythological situation. It's a very real geopolitical situation. Tolkien himself struggled with his definition of the orcs and where the orcs came from and whether Morgoth, his corruption was the true identity and value of these things, or whether they came from Iluvatar, as everything does. So he struggled with this himself, and he changed things several times.
Yeah.
But
although we know from the published Silmarillion, the most accepted canonical acceptance is basically the way Adar tells it, which is that they were in fact corrupted elves that were basically kidnapped by Morgoth.
And he would say that they were slaves. They obeyed the will of their master. Their master is gone now. Sauron, the second in command, he believes he's gone as well. I think what he is saying is that the orcs will live freely in an area that is set up for them, that doesn't have sunlight. Is he saying that he's going to rule this area as some sort of democracy, and they won't be an aggressor? He really doesn't get that far into it. He does call them free brothers and sisters in their own homeland. So, I mean, are we talking like almost a Zion for orcs, if you will? Is that what this is to Adar, or is this just a place to set up shop before you do what dark things inevitably do and try to spread your evil throughout the land? Which one is it?
I gotta be honest, it's hard to say which one that of those two it is. However, the argument that he presented, I think I already said this, it's hard to deny that, you know, any living race, any intelligent living race should not have a homeland and have a freedom and, you know, have a lack of persecution. Now, obviously, within the show and in the books, there's other complexities to this whole thing. But looking at it directly from Adar's argument and accepting it at face value, he seems like the good guy here, I gotta be honest.
Certainly, if you just isolate their argument where it's we deserve to live, no you don't, that's, you know,
it's hard. I mean, it's, you know, Galadriel comes across with the attitude and intensity that you get from racists, you know, that you get from groups of people who hate other people simply because of who they are,
so
not what they can be.
Clearly, though, is this, I think what we're going to see here, we have a show that's going to be 5 seasons long, that's going to have 4 more seasons. We have 2 more episodes in this season. Are we going to see the integration of sympathetic orcs and sympathetic dark characters that we see as coexisting in Middle Earth and not just as a threat? Is that possible? That's possible in a 5-season show that's already bringing this into view.
Well, it's possible, and I think Adar perhaps is already one of them. So, you know, we'll see how it goes and where it goes, and just how quickly we are introduced to Sauron, who I don't think will take all that long to, you know, become the true king of the Southlands. Oops, I mean Mordor, you know? We'll see.
We've got that tangled knot, the king of the Southlands, which is now Mordor. What's going to happen with that? But also, the thing that I want to add up is, who created this cataclysmic sort of Rube Goldberg system that was going to set into motion the cause of Mount Doom?
I can tell you that. It was Elon Musk.
It was definitely Musk?
Oh, it's definitely Musk. There's no question
about
it.
Anyway,
we can move on with that. Yeah. What's that?
But the fact is that was an elven watchtower. And all of this had to be put into play. It's almost as compelling a cover up as the Rings of Power themselves. This vast underground network of tunnels and this key that unlocks the side of the mountain, basically, and causes a whole rock wall to move. Like this had to be in place either from ancient times or before the elves knew about it, or while the elves had this watchtower going, it had to be engineered right under their noses. So that is mystery. How did this happen?
I've got 2 possible ways that this can play out, and I'm not saying that there aren't others, but number one, I think it is possible that we can find out that later on in the show, we get some story that Sauron had, you know, under the guise of yet another form, perhaps, orchestrated the construction of this, you know, perhaps in elven form.
He orchestrated it. I see what you did there.
Nice, right?
Orchestrated.
Of course, we prefer Uruk. But the other possibility is we just don't get an answer to that. And I think that's also a strong possibility for the show, is that we just never get an answer. I got to be honest.
I want an answer.
I would like one, too. I'm just not going to hang my hat on the fact that we're going to get it. I think it's very possible we don't. That, you know, there are other story beats for the writers to be concerned about. And, have that happened, you know, let someone figure it out themselves and get a no prize for it. It's an old Stanley reference. But, you know, I think we might just not get an answer, to be honest. We'll find out.
So, we didn't get any Harfoots and Meteor Man. We didn't get any Gil-galad and Elrond and Durin. We didn't get any Mithril.
My favorite ship.
I think, I don't know. I think we might get a Balrog in the season finale.
We did see one in the trailer. And it was not the shot that we got, you know, for the legend.
No, they're so, digging. They're digging past where they can support the Earth or something. We see that in the coming attractions. So, you know, speaking of which, go ahead.
I was going to say there's just one thing that I wanted to double back on that we didn't get to, and that is the fact that. So if we now accept the conversation between Galadriel and Adar to be canonical to the show, at least, in terms of the birth of the orcs and how they came to be, that then canonizes the fact that Adar, we can now finally say, is literally the father of the orcs. This is not just a metaphor. They are his actual blood children, at least some of them. And that would then imply that, Adar has to be getting all up inside the guts of some of those orc ladies that we probably saw in the fight. And that's a little bit disturbing.
What I was going to say is that if you see the degeneration from Adar to the orcs, I mean, Adar basically looks like an elf with a little bit of a skin condition. He looks kind of like an elf. And the orcs look like, you know.
Orcs?
They're fucking gross. So, like,
Hey, let's not get racist.
What happened?
We don't need to be like Galadriel.
You know, Adar's an elf with a skin condition. How did he get these kids? What was he doing? What was he up to? Who was he doing?
Listen, I think maybe some of his swimmers are a little messed up in there.
He was, I don't know. He had a couple of too many drinks at the discotheque back in the day.
A little too much of that mead and ale.
Is that, that's a troll, Adar. That's a troll. No. Oh, God. Stay away from the trolls when you've been drinking, okay?
All right, well, you know, I guess it's going to be what it's going
to
be now.
So, also, just wanted to fill everybody in. Rowan, last we checked, we thought maybe he had a social disease, my friend, or some sort of a venereal problem. No, it turned out to be just abrasion, just friction. And the thing is more like Esther, she'll be called Esther. It's not her real name. She's an older woman that he's seeing.
An
octogenarian. And she does pretty good, and she keeps pretty active. And he feels like if he's not spending every minute with her, I think they went out east today to Montauk or something, then somebody else is going to be there. Somebody else is gonna be getting her attention. So
I don't let that happen, buddy.
Yeah, I don't know how much we're gonna see of Rowan. We do get his notes, and he is very meticulous. But Queen Esther is number one on his list right now, giving him abrasions. Oh God, Rowan. I pray for you. So, my name is Rob Law. This is the JRR You Talking to Me podcast. And Jude's got a couple of things he's going to take you out. And I'm going to say bye-bye, adios, arrivederci, see you later.
And I am Jude Fox. And if you want to contact us, you can email us at youtalkintome@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at You Talkin' to Me About the Fellowship. And I just want to remind everyone to like, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating wherever you find your podcasts. Share with your friends to help grow the fellowship. And until next time, bye-bye.